guilt and remorse, and as he exhaled, they trailed away and vanished in the air. He breathed out his whole life. Everything he had done, everything he had been, friends and enemies, dreams and hopes and fears. Empty, he found clarity. Scrubbed clean, the force shone through him. He sat up and nodded to Yoda. Yes, he said. We may be the last, but what if we're not? Green leather brows drew together over lambent eyes.
The temple beacon.
Yes. Any surviving Jedi might still obey the recall and be killed. Bail Organa looked from one Jedi to the other, frowning.
What are you saying?
I'm saying, Obi-Wan replied, that we have to go back to Coruscant.
It's too dangerous, the senator said instantly. The whole planet is a trap.
Yes, we have a... The loss of Anakin stabbed him. Then he let that go too. I have, he corrected himself, a policy on traps.
Chapter 19, The Face of the Sith. Mustafar burned with lava streaming from volcanoes of glittering obsidian. At the fringe of its gravity well, a spray of prismatic starlight warped a starfighter into existence. Declamping from its hyperdrive ring, the starfighter streaked into an atmosphere choked with dense smoke and cinders. The starfighter followed a pre-programmed course toward the planet's lone installation, an automated lava mine built originally by the Techno Union to draw precious metals from the continuous rivers of burning stone. Upgraded with the finest mechanized defenses that money could buy, the settlement had become the final redoubt of the leaders of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. It was absolutely impenetrable. Unless one had its deactivation codes, which was how the starfighter could land without causing the installation's defenses to so much as stir. The habitable areas of the settlement were spread among towers that looked like poisonous toadstools sprung from the bank of a river of fire. The main control center squatted atop the largest, beside the small landing deck where the starfighter had alit. It was from this control center, less than an hour before, that a coded command had been transmitted over every holonet repeater in the galaxy. At that signal, every combat droid in every army on every planet marched back to its transport, resocketed itself, and turned itself off. The Clone Wars were over. Almost. There was a final detail. A dark cloaked figure swung down from the cockpit of the starfighter. Bail Organa strode into the Tantive's shuttle deck to find Obi-Wan and Yoda gazing dubiously at the tiny cockpit of Obi-Wan's starfighter.
I suppose, Obi-Wan was saying reluctantly, if you don't mind riding on my lap.
That may not be necessary, Bail said. I've just been summoned back to Coruscant by Mas Amida. Palpatine has called the Senate into extraordinary session. Attendance is required.
Ah. Obi-Wan's mouth turned downward. It's clear what this will be about.
I am, Bail said slowly, concerned it might be a trap.
Unlikely this is.
Yoda hobbled toward him.
Unknown is the purpose of your sudden departure from the capital. Dead, young Obi-Wan and I are both presumed to be.
And Palpatine won't be moving against the Senate as a whole, Obi-Wan added. At least not yet. He'll need the illusion of democracy to keep the individual star systems in line. He won't risk a general uprising.
Bail nodded. In that case, he took a deep breath. Perhaps I can offer your graces a lift.
Inside the control center of the separatist bunker on Mustafar, Wat Tambor was adjusting the gas mix inside his armor. Poggle the Lesser was massaging his fleshy lip tendrils. Shumai was fiddling with the brass binding that restrained her hair into the stylish, curving horn that rose behind her head. San Hill was stretching his body stocking, which had begun to ride up in the crotch. Rune Ha'ako was shifting his weight nervously from foot to foot, while Newt Gunray spoke to the hollow presence of Darth Sidious.
"The plan has gone exactly as you promised, my lord," Gunray said. "This is a glorious day for the galaxy."
"Yes, indeed. Thanks in great part to you, Viceroy, and to your associates of the Techno Union and the IBC, and, of course, Archduke Poggle. You have all performed magnificently. Have your droid armies completed shutdown?"
"Yes, my lord. Nearly an hour ago."
"Excellent. You will be handsomely rewarded. Has my new apprentice, Darth Vader, arrived?"
"His ship touched down only a moment ago."
"Good. Good."
The holoscan of the cloaked man said pleasantly,
"I have left your reward in his hands. He will take care of you."
The door cycled open. A tall, cloaked figure, slim but broad-shouldered, face shadowed by a heavy hood, stood in the doorway. San Hill beat the others to the greeting.
"Welcome, Lord Vader."
His elongated legs almost tangled with each other in his rush to shake the hand of the Sith Lord.
"On behalf of the leadership of the Confederacy of Independent Systems, let me be the first to..."
"Very well. You will be the first." The cloaked figure stepped inside and made a gesture with a black-gloved hand. Blast doors slammed across every exit. The control panel exploded in a shower of sparking wires. The cloaked figure threw back its hood. San Hill recoiled, hands flapping like panicked birds sewn to his wrists. He had time to gasp,
You're Anakin Skywalker!"
before a fountain of blue-white plasma burned into his chest, curving through a loop that charred all three of his hearts. The Separatist leadership watched in frozen horror as the corpse of the head of the Intergalactic Banking Clan collapsed like a depowered protocol droid. "The resemblance," Darth Vader said, "is deceptive." The Senate guard blinked, then straightened and smoothed the drape of his robe. He risked a glance at his partner, who flanked the opposite side of the door. Had they really just gotten as lucky as he thought they had? Were this senator and his aides really walking right out of the turbo lift with a couple of as yet uncaptured Jedi? Wow, promotions all around. The guard tried not to stare at the two Jedi and did his best to sound professional.
"Welcome back, Senator. May I see your clearance?"
An identichip was produced without hesitation. Bail Organa, senior senator from Alderaan.
"Thank you. You may proceed."
The guard handed back the identichip. He was rather pleased with how steady and businesslike he sounded.
"We will take custody of the Jedi."
Then the taller of the two Jedi murmured gently that it would be better if he and his counterpart were to stay with the senator. And really, he seemed like such a reasonable fellow, and it was such a good idea. After all, the Grand Convocation Chamber of the Galactic Senate was so secure, there was really no way for a Jedi to cause any trouble for anyone, and they could just as easily be apprehended on their way out. And the guard didn't want to seem like an unreasonable fellow himself, and so he found himself nodding and agreeing that yes, indeed, it would be better if the Jedi stayed with the senator. And everyone was so reasonable and agreeable that it seemed perfectly reasonable and agreeable to the guard that the Jedi and the senator, instead of staying together as they'd said, made low-voiced, "Force be with you" farewells. It never occurred to the guard to object, even when the senator entered the convocation chamber and the two Jedi headed off for, well, apparently, somewhere else. All eight members of Decoy Squad 5 were deployed at a down-level loading dock, where supplies that Jedi could not grow in their own temple gardens had been delivered daily. Not anymore. This deep in Coruscant's down-levels, the sun never shone. The only illumination came from antiquated glow globes, their faded light yellow as ancient parchment, that only darkened the shadows around. In those shadows lived the dregs of the galaxy, squatters and scavengers madmen, and fugitives from the justice above. Parts of Coruscant's down levels could be worse than Nar Shaddaa. The men of Decoy Squad 5 would have been alert on any post. They were bred to be. Here, though, they were in a combat zone, where their lives and their missions depended on their perceptions, and on how fast their blasters could come out from inside those Jedi-style robes. So when a ragged, drooling hunchback lurched out of the gloom nearby, a bundle cradled in his arms, Decoy Squad 5 took it for granted that he was a threat. Blasters appeared with miraculous speed.
Halt! Identify yourself.
No, 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 your graces. Oh, no. I'm being here to help, you see. I'm on your side.
The hunchback slurped drool back into his slack lips as he lurched toward them.
Look what I got here. I mean, look it. It's a Jedi babby, ain't it?
The sergeant of the squad squinted at the bundle in the hunchback's arms. A Jedi baby?
Oh, sure. Sure, your grace. Jedi baby. Sure as hell it is. Come from out your temple, didn't it? Look it.
The hunchback was now close enough that the sergeant could see what he carried in his filthy bundle. It was a baby. Sort of. It was the ugliest baby the sergeant had ever seen, alien or not, wizened and shriveled like a worn-out purse of moldy leather, with great pop eyes and the toothless idiot's grin. The sergeant frowned skeptically.
Anyone could grab some deformed kid and claim it's anything they want. How do you know it's a Jedi?
The baby said,
My lightsaber. The first clue would be.
A burning blade of green slanted across the sergeant's face so close he could smell the ozone, and the hunchback wasn't a hunchback anymore. He now held the lightsaber the color of a summer sky, and he said in a clipped, educated, Coruscanti accent, Please don't try to resist. No one has to get hurt. The men of Decoy Squad 5 disagreed. 6 seconds later, all eight of them were dead. Yoda looked up at Obi-Wan.
To hide the bodies, no point there is.
Obi-Wan nodded agreement. These are clones. An abandoned post is as much a giveaway as a pile of corpses. Let's get to that beacon. Bail slipped into the rear of the Naboo delegation Senate pod as Palpatine thundered from the podium.
These Jedi murderers left me scarred, left me deformed. But they could not scar my integrity. They could not deform my resolve. The remaining traitors will be hunted down, rooted out wherever they may hide, and brought to justice, dead or alive. All collaborators will suffer the same fate. Those who protect the enemy are the enemy. Now is the time. Now we will strike back. Now we will destroy the destroyers. Death to the enemies of democracy.
The Senate roared. Amidala didn't even glance at Bail as he slid into a seat beside her. On the opposite side, Representative Binks nodded at him, but said nothing, blinking solemnly. Bail frowned. Even if the irrepressible Jar Jar was worried, this looked to be even worse than he'd expected. And he had expected it to be very, very bad. He touched Amidala's arm softly. It's all a lie. You know that, don't you? She stared frozenly toward the podium. Her eyes glistened with unshed tears. I don't know what I know. Not anymore. Where have you been?
I was held up.
As she once had told him, some things were better left unsaid. He's been presenting evidence all afternoon, she said in a flat, effectless monotone. Not just the assassination attempt. The Jedi were about to overthrow the Senate.
It's a lie, he said again.
In the center of the Grand Convocation Chamber, Palpatine leaned upon the Chancellor's podium as though he drew strength from the great seal on its front.
This has been the most trying of times, but we have passed the test. The war is over!
The Senate roared.
The Separatists have been utterly defeated, and the Republic will stand! United! United and free!
The Senate roared.
The Jedi Rebellion was our final test. It was the last gasp of the forces of darkness. Now we have left that darkness behind us forever, and the new day has begun. It is morning in the Republic.
The Senate roared. Padme stared without blinking. Here it comes, she said numbly.
Bail shook his head. Here what comes?
You'll see.
Never again will we be divided. Never again will sector turn against sector, planet turn against planet, sibling turn against sibling. We are one nation, indivisible.
The Senate roared.
To ensure that we will always stand together, that we will always speak with a single voice and act with a single hand, the Republic must change. We must evolve. We must grow. We have become an empire, in fact. Let us become an empire in name as well. We are the first galactic empire.
The Senate went wild.
What are they doing? Bail said. Do they understand what they're cheering for?
Padme shook her head.
We are an empire, Palpatine went on, that will continue to be ruled by this august body. We are an empire that will never return to the political maneuvering and corruption that have wounded us so deeply. We are an empire that will be directed by a single sovereign, chosen for life.
The Senate went wilder.
We are an empire ruled by the majority, an empire ruled by a new constitution, an empire of laws, not of politicians, an empire devoted to the preservation of a just society, of a safe and secure society. We are an empire that will stand 10,000 years.
The roar of the Senate took on a continuous boiling roll like the inside of a permanent thunderstorm.
We will celebrate the anniversary of this day as Empire Day for the sake of our children, for our children's children, for the next 10,000 years. Safety, security, justice, and peace.
The Senate went berserk.
Say it with me. Safety, security, justice, and peace. Safety, security, justice, and peace.
The Senate took up the chant, louder and louder until it seemed the whole galaxy roared along. Bail couldn't hear Padme over the din, but he could read her lips. So this is how liberty dies, she was saying to herself, with cheering and applause.
We can't let this happen. Bail lurched to his feet. I have to get my pod. We can still enter a motion.
No. Her hand seized his arm with astonishing strength, and for the first time since he arrived, she looked straight into his eyes. No, Bail. You can't enter a motion. You can't. Fang Zar has already been arrested, and Tundra Domei, and it won't be long until the entire delegation of the 2,000 are declared enemies of the state. You stayed off that list for good reason. Don't add your name by what you do today.
But I can't just stand by and watch.
You're right. You can't just watch. You have to vote for him.
What?
Bail, it's the only way. It's the only hope you have of remaining in a position to do anyone any good. Vote for Palpatine. Vote for the Empire. Make Mon Mothma vote for him too. Be good little senators. Mind your manners and keep your heads down. And keep doing all those things we can't talk about. All those things I can't know. Promise me, Bail.
Padme, what you're talking about, what we're not talking about, it could take 20 years.
Are you under suspicion? What are you going to do? Don't worry about me, she said distantly. I don't know I'll live that long.
Within the Separatist Leadership Bunker's control center were dozens of combat droids. There were armed and armored guards. There were automated defense systems. There were screams and tears and pleas for mercy. None of them mattered. The Sith had come to Mustafar. Poggle the Lesser, Archduke of Geonosis, scrambled like an animal through a litter of severed arms and legs and heads, both metal and flesh, whimpering, fluttering his ancient gauzy wings until a bar of lightning flash-burned his own head free of his neck. Shumai, president and CEO of the Commerce Guild, looked up from her knees, hands clasped before her, tears streaming down her shriveled cheeks. "We were promised a reward," she gasped. "A handsome reward."
"I am your reward," the Sith Lord said. "You don't find me handsome."
"Please,"
she screeched through her sobbing.
"Please."
The blue-white blade cut into and out from her skull, and her corpse swayed. A negligent flip of the wrist flashed through her column of neck rings. Her brain-burned head tumbled to the floor. The only sound then was a panicky stutter of footfalls as Wat Tambor and the two Nymordians scampered along a hallway toward a nearby conference room. The Sith Lord was in no hurry to pursue. All the exits from the control center were blast-shielded, and they were sealed, and he had destroyed the controls. The conference room was, as the expression goes, a dead end. Thousands of clone troops swarmed the Jedi Temple. Multiple battalions on each level were not just an occupying force, but engaged in the long, painstaking process of preparing dead bodies for positive identification. The Jedi dead were to be tallied against the rolls maintained in the temple archives. The clone dead would be cross-checked with regimental rosters. All the dead had to be accounted for. This was turning out to be somewhat more complicated than the clone officers had expected. Though the fighting had ended hours ago, troopers kept turning up missing. Usually small patrolling squads, 5 troopers or less, that still made random sweeps through the temple hallways, checking every door and window, every desk and every closet. Sometimes when those closets were opened, what was found inside was 5 dead clones. And there were disturbing reports as well. Officers coordinating the sweeps recorded a string of sightings of movement, usually a flash of robe disappearing around a corner, caught in a trooper's peripheral vision, that on investigation seemed to have been only imagination or hallucination. There were also multiple reports of inexplicable sounds coming from out-of-the-way areas that turned out to be deserted. Though clone troopers were schooled from even before awakening in their Kaminoan creche schools to be ruthlessly pragmatic, materialistic, and completely impervious to superstition, some of them began to suspect that the temple might be haunted. In the vast misty gloom of the Room of 1,000 Fountains, one of the clones on the cleanup squad caught a glimpse of someone moving beyond a stand of Hylaean marsh bamboo.
"Halt!" he shouted. "You there! Don't move!"
The shadowy figure darted off into the gloom, and the clone turned to his squad brothers.
"Come on! Whatever that was, we can't let it get away!"
Clones pelted off into the mist. Behind them, at the spill of bodies they'd been working on, fog and gloom gave birth to a pair of Jedi Masters. Obi-Wan stepped over white-armored bodies to kneel beside blaster-burned corpses of children. Tears flowed freely down tracks that hadn't had a chance to dry since he'd first entered the temple. Not even the younglings survived. It looks like they made a stand here. Yoda's face creased with ancient sadness.
"Or trying to flee they were, with some turning back to slow the pursuit."
Obi-Wan turned to another body, an older one, a Jedi fully mature and beyond. Grief punched a gasp from his chest.
"Master Yoda, it's the troll."
Yoda looked over and nodded bleakly.
"Abandon his young students. Sindralig would not."
Obi-Wan sank to his knees beside the fallen Jedi.
"He was my lightsaber instructor."
"And his was I,"
Yoda said.
"Cripple us, grief will, if let it we do."
"I know. But it's one thing to know a friend is dead, Master Yoda.
It's another to find his body.
Yes.
Yoda moved closer. With his gimmer stick, he pointed at a bloodless gash in Drawleague's shoulder that had cloven deep into his chest.
Yes, it is. See this, do you? This wound, no blaster could make.
An icy void opened in Obi-Wan's heart. It swallowed his pain and his grief, leaving behind a precariously empty calm. He whispered, "A lightsaber."
Business with the recall beacon have we still?
Yoda pointed with his stick at figures winding toward them among the trees and pools.
Returning the clones are.
Obi-Wan rose. I will learn who did this.
Learn?
Yoda shook his head sadly.
No, already you do,
he said, and hobbled off into the gloom. Darth Vader left nothing living behind when he walked from the main room of the control center. Casually, carelessly, he strolled along the hallway, scoring the durasteel wall with the tip of his blade, enjoying the sizzle of disintegrating metal as he had savored the smoke of charred alien flesh. The conference room door was closed. A barrier so paltry would be an insult to the blade. A black-gloved hand made a fist. The door crumpled and fell. The Sith Lord stepped over it. The conference room was walled with transparasteel. Beyond, obsidian mountains rained fire upon the land. Rivers of lava embraced the settlement. Rune Ha'ako, aide and confidential secretary to the Viceroy of the Trade Federation, tripped over a chair as he stumbled back. He fell to the floor, shaking like a grub in a frying pan, trying to scrabble beneath the table.
Stop! He cried. Enough! We surrender! Do you understand? You can't just kill us!
The Sith Lord smiled. Can't I?
We're unarmed! We surrender! Please! Please! You're a Jedi!
You fought a war to destroy the Jedi. Vader stood above the shivering Nymoidian, smiling down upon him, then fed him half a meter of plasma. Congratulations on your success. The Sith Lord stepped over Ha'ako's corpse to where Wat Tambor clawed uselessly at the transparisteel wall with his armored gauntlets. The head of the Techno Union turned at his approach, cringing, arms lifted to shield his faceplate from the flames in the dragon's eyes.
Please. I'll give you anything, anything you want.
The blade flashed twice. Tambor's arms fell to the floor, followed by his head. Thank you. Darth Vader turned to the last living leader of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Newt Gunray, Viceroy of the Trade Federation, stood trembling in an alcove, blood-tinged tears streaming down his green mottled cheeks.
The war, he whimpered. The war is over. Lord Sidious promised. He promised we would be left in peace.
His transmission was garbled. The blade came up. He promised you would be left in pieces. In the main holocom center of the Jedi Temple, high atop the central spire, Obi-Wan used the Force to reach deep within the shell of the recall beacon's mechanism, subtly altering the pulse calibration to flip the signal from come home to run and hide. Done without any visible alteration, it would take the troopers quite a while to detect the recalibration and longer still to reset it. This was all that could be done for any surviving Jedi. A warning, to give them a fighting chance. Obi-Wan turned from the recall beacon to the internal security scans. He had to find out exactly what he was warning them against.
Do this not,
Yoda said.
Leave we must, before discovered we are.
I have to see it, Obi-Wan said grimly. Like I said downstairs, knowing is one thing, seeing is another.
Seeing will only cause you pain.
Then it is pain that I have earned. I won't hide from it. He keyed a code that brought up a holoscan of the Room of 1,000 Fountains. I am not afraid. Yoda's eyes narrowed to green gold slits.
You should be.
Stone-faced, Obi-Wan watched younglings run into the room, fleeing a storm of blaster fire. He watched Sin Dralig and a pair of teenage Padawans. Was that we? The boy Yoda had brought to Vijun. Backing into the scene, blades whirling, cutting down the advancing clone troopers with deflected bolts. He watched a lightsaber blade flick into the shot, cutting down first one Padawan, then the other. He watched the brisk stride of a caped figure who hacked through Dralig's shoulder, then stood aside as the old troll fell dying to let the rest of the clones blast the children to shreds. Obi-Wan's expression never flickered. He opened himself to what he was about to see. He was prepared and centered and trusting in the Force. And yet... Then the caped man turned to meet a cloaked figure behind him. And he was... He was... Obi-Wan, staring, wished that he had the strength to rip his eyes out of his head. But even blind, he would see this forever. He would see his friend, his student, his brother, turn and kneel in front of a black-cloaked Lord of the Sith. His head rang with a silent scream. The traitors have been destroyed, Lord Sidious, and the archives are secured. Our ancient holocrons are again in the hands of the Sith.
Good, good. Together, we shall master every secret of the Force.
The Sith Lord purred, like a contented rancor.
You have done well, my new apprentice. Do you feel your power growing?
Yes, my master.
Lord Vader, your skills are unmatched by any Sith before you. Go forth, my boy. Go forth and bring peace to our empire.
Fumbling nervelessly, Obi-Wan somehow managed to shut down the holoscan. He leaned on the console, but his arms would not support him. They buckled, and he twisted to the floor. He huddled against the console, blind with pain. Yoda was as sympathetic as the root of a rosher tree.
Warned you were.
Obi-Wan said, I should have let them shoot me.
What?
No. That was already too late. It was already too late at Geonosis. The Zabrak on Naboo. I should have died there, before I ever brought him here.
Stop this, you will!
Yoda gave him a stick jab in the ribs, sharp enough to straighten him up.
Make a Jedi fall one cannot. Beyond even Lord Sidious this is. Chose this Skywalker did.
Obi-Wan lowered his head. And I'm afraid I might know why.
Why? Why matters not. There is no why. There is only a Lord of the Sith and his apprentice. Two Sith.
Yoda leaned close.
And two Jedi.
Obi-Wan nodded, but he still couldn't meet the gaze of the ancient master. I'll take Palpatine.
Strong enough to face Lord Sidious, you will never be. Die you will, and painfully.
Don't make me kill Anakin, he said. He's like my brother, Master.
The boy you trained, gone he is, twisted by the dark side, consumed by Darth Vader. Out of this misery you must put him. To visit our new Emperor, my job will be.
Now Obi-Wan did face him. Palpatine faced Mace and Ajin and Kit and Saisi, four of the greatest swordsmen our order has ever produced, by himself. Even both of us together wouldn't have a chance.
True,
Yoda said.
But both of us apart, a chance we might create.
Chapter 20. Chiaroscuro. C-3PO identified the craft docking on the veranda as a DC-0052 intergalactic speeder. To be on the safe side, he left the security curtain engaged. In these troubled times, safety outweighed courtesy, even for him. a cloaked and hooded human male emerged from the DC-0052 and approached the Veil of Energy. C-3PO moved to meet him.
Hello, may I help you?
The human lifted his hands to his hood. Instead of taking it down, he folded it back far enough that C-3PO could register the distinctive relationship of eyes, nose, mouth, and beard.
Master Kenobi!
C-3PO had long ago been given detailed and quite specific instructions on the procedure for dealing with the unexpected arrival of furtive Jedi. He instantly deactivated the security curtain and beckoned.
Come inside, quickly. You may be seen.
As C-3PO swiftly ushered him into the sitting room, Master Kenobi asked, Has Anakin been here?
Yes,
C-3PO said reluctantly.
He arrived shortly after he and the army saved the Republic from the Jedi Rebellion.
He cut himself off when he noticed that Master Kenobi suddenly looked fully prepared to dismantle him bolt by bolt. Perhaps he should not have been so quick to let the Jedi in. Wasn't he some sort of outlaw now?
I should...
C-3PO stammered, backing away.
I'll just go get the Senator, shall I? She's been lying down. After the Grand Convocation this morning, she didn't feel entirely well, and so...
The Senator appeared at the top of the curving stairway, belting a soft robe over her dressing gown, and C-3PO decided his most appropriate course of action would be to discreetly withdraw. But not too far. If Master Kenobi was up to mischief, C-3PO had to be in a position to alert Captain Typho and the security staff on the spot. Senator Amidala certainly didn't seem inclined to treat Master Kenobi as a dangerous outlaw. Quite the contrary, in fact. She seemed to have fallen into his arms, and her voice was thoroughly choked with emotion as she expressed a possibly inappropriate level of joy at finding the Jedi still alive. There followed some discussion that C-3PO didn't entirely understand. It was political information, entirely outside his programming, having to do with Master Anakin and the Republic having fallen, whatever that meant, and with something called a Sith Lord, and Chancellor Palpatine, and the dark side of the Force, and really he couldn't make sense of any of it. The only parts he clearly understood had to do with the Jedi Order being outlawed and all but wiped out. That news had been all over the Lipartian Way this morning, and the not altogether unexpected revelation that Master Kenobi had come here seeking Master Anakin. They were partners after all, though despite all their years together, Master Anakin's recent behavior made it sadly clear that Master Kenobi's lovely manners had entirely failed to rub off. When was the last time you saw him? Do you know where he is? C-3PO's photoreceptors registered the Senator's flush as she lowered her eyes and said, No. 3 years running the household of a career politician stopped C-3PO from popping back out and reminding the Senator that Master Anakin had told her just yesterday that he was on his way to Mustafar. He knew very well that the Senator's memory failed only when she decided it should. Padme, you must help me, Master Kenobi said. Anakin must be found. He must be stopped. How can you say that? She pulled back from him and turned away, folding her arms over the curve of her belly. He's just won the war! The war was never the Republic against the Separatists. It was Palpatine against the Jedi. We lost. The rest of it was just play-acting. It was real enough for everyone who died. Yes. Now it was Master Kenobi's turn to lower his eyes, including the children at the temple. What? They were murdered, Padme. I saw it. He took her shoulders and turned her back to face him. They were murdered by Anakin. It's a lie. She pushed him away, forcefully enough that C-3PO nearly triggered the security alert then and there. But Master Kenobi only regarded her with an expression that matched C-3PO's internal recognition files of sadness and pity. He could never. He could never. Not my Anakin. Master Kenobi's voice was soft and slow. He must be found. Her reply was even softer. C-3PO's oral sensor barely recorded it at all. You've decided to kill him. Master Kenobi said gravely,
he has become a very great threat. At this, the senator's medical condition seemed to finally overcome her. Her knees buckled, and Master Kenobi was forced to catch her and help her onto the sofa. Apparently, Master Kenobi knew somewhat more about human physiology than did C-3PO. Though his photoreceptors hadn't been dark to the ongoing changes in Senator Amidala's contour, C-3PO had no idea what they might signify. At any rate, Master Kenobi seemed to comprehend the situation instantly. He settled her comfortably onto the sofa and stood frowning down at her. "Anakin is the father, isn't he?" The senator looked away. Her eyes were leaking again. The Jedi Master said, hushed, "I'm very sorry, Padme. If it could be different, go away, Obi-Wan. I won't help you. I can't." She turned her face away. "I won't help you kill him." Master Kenobi said again, "I'm very sorry," and left. C-3PO tentatively returned to the sitting room, intending to inquire after the senator's health. But before he could access a sufficiently delicate phrase to open the discussion, the senator said softly,
"3PO, do you know what this is?"
She lifted toward him the pendant that hung from the cord of gerba leather she always wore around her neck.
"Why, yes, my lady,"
the protocol droid replied, bemused but happy as always to be of service.
"It's a snippet of Jarpor. Younglings on Tatooine carve tribal runes into them to make amulets. They are supposed by superstitious folk to bring good fortune and protect one from harm, and sometimes are thought to be love charms. I must say, my lady, I'm quite surprised you've forgotten, seeing as how you've worn that one ever since it was given to you so many years ago by Master An."
"I hadn't forgotten what it was, 3PO," she said distantly. "Thank you. I was reminding myself of the boy who gave it to me."
"My lady?"
If she hadn't forgotten, why would she ask? Before C-3PO could phrase a properly courteous interrogative, she said, "Contact Captain Typho. Have him ready my skiff."
"My lady, are you going somewhere?"
"We are," she said. "We're going to Mustafar." From the shadows beneath the mirror-polished skiff's landing ramp, Obi-Wan Kenobi watched Captain Typho try to talk her out of it.
"My lady," the Naboo security chief protested, "at least let me come with you."
"Thank you, Captain, but there's no need," Padme said distantly. "The war's over, and this is a personal errand. And, Captain, it must remain personal, do you understand? You know nothing of my leaving, nor where I am bound, nor when I can be expected to return."
"As you wish, my lady," Typho said with a reluctant bow. "But I strongly disagree with this decision."
"I'll be fine, Captain. After all, I have 3PO to look after me." Obi-Wan could clearly hear the droids murmured,
"Oh, dear."
After Typho finally climbed into his speeder and took off, Padme and her droid boarded the skiff. She wasted no time at all. The skiff's repulsor lifts engaged before the landing ramp had even retracted. Obi-Wan had to jump for it. He swung inside just as the hatch sealed itself and the gleaming starship leapt for the sky. Darth Vader stood in the command bridge of the Mustafar Control Center, hand of durasteel clasping hand of flesh behind him, and gazed up through the transparisteel view wall at the galaxy he would one day rule. He paid no attention to the litter of corpses around his feet. He could feel his power growing, indeed. He had the measure of his master already. Not long after Palpatine shared the secret of Darth Plagueis' discovery, their relationship would undergo a sudden transformation, a fatal transformation. Everything was proceeding according to plan, and yet he couldn't shake a certain creeping sensation, a kind of cold, slimy ooze that slithered up the veins of his legs and spread clammy tendrils through his guts.
almost as though he was still afraid.
She will die, you know, the dragon whispered.
He shook himself, scowling.
Impossible. He was Darth Vader. Fear had no power over him.
He had destroyed his fear.
All things die.
Yet it was as though, when he had crushed the dragon under his boot, the dragon had sunk venomed fangs into his heel. Now its poison chilled him to the bone.
Even stars burn out.
He shook himself again and strode toward the holocom. He would talk to his master. Palpatine had always helped him keep the dragon down. A comlink chimed. Yoda opened his eyes in the darkness.
Yes, Master Kenobi?
We're landing now. Are you in position?
I am.
A moment of silence.
Master Yoda, if we don't see each other again...
Think not of after, Obi-Wan. Always now, even eternity will be.
Another moment of silence. Longer.
May the Force be with you.
It is. And may the Force be with you, young Obi-Wan.
The transmission ended. Yoda rose. A gesture opened the grating of the vent shaft where he had waited in meditation, revealing the vast conic well that was the Grand Convocation Chamber of the Galactic Senate. It was sometimes called the Senate Arena. Today, this nickname would be particularly apt. Yoda stretched blood back into his green flesh. This was his time. 900 years of study and training, of teaching and of meditation, all now focused and refined and resolved into this single moment. The sole purpose of his vast span of existence had been to prepare him to enter the heart of night and bring his light against the darkness. He adjusted the angle of his blade against his belt. He draped his robe across his shoulders. With reverence, with gratitude, without fear, and without anger, Yoda went forth to war. A silvery flash outside caught Darth Vader's eye, as though an elegantly curved mirror swung through the smoke and cinders, picking up the shine of white-hot lava. From one knee, he could look right through the holoscan of his master while he continued his report. He was no longer afraid. He was too busy pretending to be respectful.
The Separatist leadership is no more, my master.
It is finished, then.
The image offered a translucent mockery of a smile.
You have restored peace and justice to the galaxy, Lord Vader.
That is my sole ambition, Master.
The image tilted its head, its smile twisting without transition to a scowl.
Lord Vader, I sense a disturbance in the Force. You may be in danger.
He glanced at the mirror flash outside. He knew that ship. In danger of being kissed to death, perhaps. How should I be in danger, Master?
I cannot say, but the danger is real. Be mindful.
Be mindful. Be mindful, he thought with a mental sneer. Is that the best you can do? I could get that much from Obi-Wan.
I will, my master. Thank you.
The image faded. He got to his feet, and now the sneer was on his lips and in his eyes.
You're the one who should be mindful, my master. I am a disturbance in the Force.
Outside, the sleek skiff settled to the deck. He spent a moment reassembling his Anakin Skywalker face. He let Anakin Skywalker's love flow through him. Let Anakin Skywalker's glad smile come to his lips. Let Anakin Skywalker's youthful energy bring a joyous bounce to his step as he trotted to the entrance over the mess of corpses and severed body parts. He'd meet her outside, and he'd keep her outside. He had a feeling she wouldn't approve of the way he had redecorated the control center. And after all, he thought, with a mental shrug, there's no arguing taste. The holding office of the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic comprised the nether vertex of the Senate Arena.
It was little more than a circular preparations area, a green room where guests of the Chancellor might be entertained before entering the Senate podium. The circular pod on its immense hydraulic pillar, which contained controls that coordinated the movement of floating Senate delegation pods and rising into the focal point of the chamber above. Above that podium, the vast hollow presence of a kneeling Sith bowed before a shadow that stood below. Guards in scarlet flanked the shadow. A Shagrian toady cringed nearby. But the danger is real. Be mindful.
I will, my master. Thank you.
The hollow presence faded, and where its huge translucency had knelt was now revealed another presence. A physical presence, tiny and aged, clad in robes and leaning on a twist of wood. But his physical presence was an illusion. The truth of him could be seen only in the Force. In the Force, he was a fountain of light.
Pity your new disciple, I do. So lately an apprentice, so soon without a master.
Why, Master Yoda, what a delightful surprise. Welcome.
The voice of the shadow hummed with anticipation.
Let me be the first to wish you Happy Empire Day.
Find it happy you will not, nor will the murderer you call Vader.
Ah.
The shadow stepped closer to the light.
So that is the threat I felt. Who is it, if I may ask? Who have you sent to kill him?
Enough it is that you know your own destroyer.
Oh, pish, Master Yoda. It wouldn't be Kenobi, would it? Please say it's Kenobi. Lord Vader gets such a thrill from killing people who care for him.
Behind the shadow, some meters away, Mos Amida, the Shagrian toady who was Speaker of the Galactic Senate, heard a whisper in Palpatine's voice.
Flee.
He did. Neither light nor shadow gave his exit a glance.
So easily slain, Obi-Wan is not.
Neither are you, apparently. But that is about to change.
The shadow took another step, and another. A lightsaber appeared, green as sunlight in a forest.
The test of that today will be.
Even a fraction of the dark side is more power than your Jedi arrogance can conceive. Living in the light, you have never seen the depth of the darkness.
The shadow spread arms that made its sleeves into black wings.
Until now.
Lightning speared from outstretched hands, and the battle was on. Padme stumbled down the landing ramp into Anakin's arms. Her eyes were raw and numb. Once inside the ship, her emotional control had finally shattered, and she had sobbed the whole way there, crying from relentless, mind-shredding dread. And so her lips were swollen, and her whole body shook, and she was just so grateful, so incredibly grateful, that again she flooded with fresh tears. Grateful that he was alive. Grateful that he'd come bounding across the landing deck to meet her, that he was still strong and beautiful, that his arms still were warm around her and his lips were soft against her hair. Anakin, my Anakin. She shivered against his chest. I've been so frightened. Shh, shh, it's all right. He stroked her hair until her trembling began to fade. Then he cupped her chin and gently raised her face to look into his eyes. You never need to worry about me. Didn't you understand? No one can hurt me. No one will ever hurt either of us. It wasn't that, my love. It was... Oh, Anakin. He said such terrible things about you. Anakin smiled down at her. About me? Who would want to say bad things about me? He chuckled. Who would dare? Obi-Wan. She smeared tears from her cheeks. He told me you turned to the dark side. That you murdered Jedi. Even younglings. Just having gotten the words out made her feel better.
Now all she had to do was rest in his arms while he held her and hugged her and promised her he would never do anything like any of that. And she started half a smile aimed up toward his eyes. But instead of the light of love in his eyes, she saw only reflections of lava. He didn't say, "I could never turn to the dark side." He didn't say, "Murder younglings? Me? That's just crazy." He said, "Obi-Wan's alive?" His voice had dropped an octave and had gone colder than the chills that were spreading from the base of her spine.
Yes. He said he was looking for you.
Did you tell him where I am?
No, Anakin. He wants to kill you. I didn't tell him anything. I wouldn't.
Too bad.
Anakin, what?
He's a traitor, Padme. He's an enemy of the state. He has to die.
Stop it, she said.
Stop talking like that. You're frightening me.
You're not the one who needs to be afraid.
It's like... Tears brimmed again. I don't even know who you are anymore.
I'm the man who loves you, he said. But he said it through clenched teeth. I'm the man who would do anything to protect you. Everything I have done for you.
Anakin.
Horror squeezed her voice down to a whisper, small and fragile and very young.
What have you done?
And she prayed that he wouldn't actually answer. What I have done is bring peace to the Republic.
The Republic is dead, she whispered. You killed it. You and Palpatine.
It needed to die. New tears started, but they didn't matter. She'd never have enough tears for this.
Anakin, can't we just go? Please, let's leave. Together. Today. Now. Before you. Before something happens.
Nothing will happen. Nothing can happen. Let Palpatine call himself Emperor. Let him. He can do the dirty work. All the messy, brutal oppression it'll take to unite the galaxy forever. United against him. He'll make himself into the most hated man in history. And when the time is right, we'll throw him down.
Anakin, stop. Don't you see?
We'll be heroes. The whole galaxy will love us. And we will rule together.
Please stop. Anakin, please stop. I can't stand it.
He wasn't listening to her. He wasn't looking at her. He was looking past her shoulder. Feral joy burned from his eyes, and his face was no longer human.
You.
From behind her, calmly precise with that clipped Coruscanti accent, Padme, move away from him.
Obi-Wan!
She whirled, and he was on the landing ramp, still and sad.
No!
You,
growled a voice that should have been her love's.
You brought him here!
She turned back, and now he was looking at her. His eyes were full of flame.
Anakin?
Padme, move away. There was an urgency in Obi-Wan's voice that sounded closer to fear than Padme had ever heard from him. He's not who you think he is. He will harm you.